Ladies and gentlemen, this show is brought to you exclusively by the Reality Check Podcast Network.
Hey guys, it's me, Santino Marelli. Today I'm going to give a little bit shout out to the Rad Turtles Wrestling Podcast. Ninja Turtles were not real. And it's on Reality Check Podcast Network. Well, Reality Check, Ninja Turtles were not real. Trust me, I went in the sewer myself. I got trapped, police department came, fire department, long story. But I got out, because I'm here. And in fact, I'm here for a long time, because I'm in the quarantines. In fact, you're in the quarantines. So check out the podcast, because what else are you going to do? Can't do nothing. You're in quarantines. Sana magan quarantines. Thank you very much, COVID-19, for giving us all this free time to check out Rad Turtles Wrestling. It's fun to say Rad Turtles. In fact, the Turtles chocolate candy, that's my mother's favorite candy, so that's something positive.
Welcome everybody to the Rad Turtles Wrestling Podcast. An in-depth, hard-hitting, cutting-edge look at today's product of the world of professional wrestling. Now, without further ado, let's introduce your host, Rad Rob, Rob Francois. Hey guys, welcome back to the Rad Turtles Wrestling Podcast. This is your RTW WWE WrestleMania 36 post-game wrap-up show. I'm your host, Rad Rob, Rob Francois, and we have quite a bit to talk about. Our initial plans were to do a post-game show on Saturday night and Sunday night, but unfortunately, our schedules did not allow us to do that, and Johnny Podcasting John Wangland was supposed to join me tonight for the post-game show. But unfortunately, he wasn't feeling well, so I'm here flying solo, breaking down all, 18 matches. So let's get right into night one of WrestleMania 36. On the kickoff show, we had a match between Drew Gulak and Cesaro. Really, really good match. I really enjoyed the... I need to make this t-shirt. I really enjoyed the chemistry between these two guys. I know I say that every single show. But it's true. I really did. I thought these guys worked well together. Drew Gulak reminds me a lot of Daniel Bryan. And obviously we know how great Cesaro is. The finish of the match, Gulak caught Cesaro in a roll-up for a near fall. He went for the Gulak. Kind of like the Yes Lock, but it's his own... submission hold. Cesaro got free, landed a boot to the face. Cesaro looked for the Gotch-style pile driver again before landing a European uppercut. Cesaro then attacked Gulak with an airplane spin for the three count. The winner was Cesaro. I was kind of shocked by that. I did not see that happening. But let's get into the main card. The first match of WrestleMania 36 on the main card was for the WWE Women's Tag Team Championships. The Kabuki Warriors, the WWE Women's Tag Team Champions, defending against Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross. Really good match. Really hard-hitting. A lot of yelling and screaming and shit-talking, especially by Asuka and Kairi. But I enjoyed this match. I thought Alexa did really, really well. She hasn't really wrestled that many matches in the last few months. That's why they've kind of put her in tag team matches, just because of her injury history. And, you know, Nikki Cross has really proved herself in the last year. And nobody ever expected this tag team to last that long. But I'm kind of glad that they did because I really enjoyed it, actually. I'm not high on the Kabuki Warriors, obviously. And they lost their tag team titles, so I was kind of happy with that. Bliss hit the Twisted Bliss on Kairi Sane for the win. So your new women's tag team champions, Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross, hopefully they'll do something with these belts. Because, you know, for whatever reason, the Pirate Hookers, the Kabuki Warriors have not defended the titles that much. And, you know, like we mentioned on the pregame show, these belts have not felt, you know, like anything special ever since Bayley and Sasha won them for the first time. Hopefully they do something with them now. Our next match was King Corbin against Elias. This has been building for a few weeks now with Elias interrupting King Corbin whenever Corbin's trying to cut a promo or do a backstage interview. You'll hear the guitar strum and then Elias tries to sing a song and Corbin never would let him. This really came to a fever pitch on last week's SmackDown when King Corbin knocked Elias off that perch that they have there at the Performance Center. For what they claim to be 15 feet down to the concrete. Obviously, it's a pre-taped show. I mean, it was all fixed and gimmicked, but still, Elias's health was in question going into this match. I thought if they really want to give Corbin a cheap win, they can give him a win by forfeit. And it's funny because Corbin grabbed the microphone and cut a promo before the match and told the referee, you know, you might as well count Elias out and award me the win via forfeiture. But then Elias' music played and it came down. Not a great match. Pretty quick match. Elias got the win with a roll-up and a handful of tights for a three count. But there's not much to really talk about this. This is your chance to really kind of build up King Corbin. And, you know, Elias can still be over. But Corbin, you know, is in search of some big wins. The steam's kind of coming off of him lately. Even though he is the king. He just, you know, after his stuff that he did with Seth and all that. He's kind of lost his momentum. So, anyway, Elias is your winner in that match. For the Raw Women's Championship, Becky Lynch, who's been the champion since last year's WrestleMania, defending against the former two-time NXT Women's Champion, Shayna Baszler. Baszler came in hot on Raw. As we remember, she bit Becky in the back of the neck, drawing a face full of blood. And then it was on from there. She had a match with Kairi Sane that wasn't very good, and I think from what we've read and what we've heard from the reports online is that Vince was not high on her after that match. But in the last couple of weeks, she's done a good job of trying to build her up and, you know, and feel like a badass. And obviously, we saw what happened in the Elimination Chamber when Shayna literally eliminated everybody, which has never happened before. So you're thinking, oh, wow, she's definitely going to beat Becky. Becky's been champ for a year. It's probably time to get the belt off her and get on somebody fresh and new. And nope. I called it. Typical Vince McMahon 101. She is the female version of John Cena. She has been pushed down our throats for over a year and a half now. And Vince won't let off. He's still going to continue to push her. This was Shayna's perfect opportunity for her to get a title. And this would have been a great chance for Becky to maybe take some time off and just rest and maybe reinvent herself. Because the whole man thing is just getting obnoxious. And this would have been a great win for Shayna to establish her as a dominant heel to the people that don't normally watch NXT. And obviously they screwed it up. Shayna Baszler lost. She had her in a Kerfoot clutch, and Lynch just kind of rolled through and got, you know, a three count. It wasn't even, at least she didn't tap or anything like that, but it was just a lackluster match. This is probably my least favorite match of the two nights, and I'm very unhappy with the outcome because I'm ready for anybody other than Becky Lynch to have the title. But good old Vince. God damn it, I'll just keep it on her. Becky's a man. Everybody loves Becky. Not everybody, Vince.
Hey, everyone. This is Sharon Waxman. I'm the founder and the editor-in-chief of The Wrap, the premier news source for daily coverage of the entertainment industry. I'm also your host of this new podcast, The Wrap-Up, a show that gives you an insider's look at the top stories in Hollywood. Each week, we'll bring you the latest news on the business of movies, TV, streaming, and tech. So be sure to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, and we'll see you each week on The Wrap-Up.
Hey everyone, this is Stan Wangler from Just Thinking. Stop on by this week and listen to some of the great podcasts we have lined up for you. Two in particular are really good shows. One is called Are We Driving Ourselves Insane? Well, are we? And the next one is called Have You Been Having a Bad Day? Did you have a bad day? Well, if you did, this is the show for you. And I bet you, when you get done listening, you'll feel a lot better. So join us.
Intercontinental Championship match, Sami Zayn defending his title against Daniel Bryan. These guys kicked the living crap out of each other. This was a very, very hard-hitting match. These guys really set the tone for the rest of the two nights. I mean, they brought this to an insane level. Look, you know, people have not really been high on Sami Zayn with the whole him kind of being the manager type thing and being the spokesperson for Shinsuke and Cesaro and all that, but I think it's been great. And I think him getting a title because he's such a chicken shit heel has been refreshing, and refreshing to the newer audience. It's really an old school thing, which is pretty much why I like it a lot, because it just reminds me a lot of Bobby Heenan back in the day. Not to say they're on the same level, but it's just it's a similar type thing. And Sammy has played it up. I mean, that's his strength. He's a great talker, but people forget how great of a wrestler he actually is. And, man, him and Bryan absolutely went tooth and nail. Near the end of the match, Sami Zayn kept Bryan down while landing some strikes to the head. Bryan recovered, dropped Zayn with a flying clothesline, followed by a series of yes kicks. Bryan trapped the arm of Zayn while stomping away on his head. Cesaro and Nakamura returned to attack Gulak, who was also outside. Bryan then took Nakamura and Cesaro out with a suicide dive. Daniel goes to the top rope. Zayn kicks him in the head on the way down for a three count. Kind of a cheap win because Shinsuke and Cesaro, you know, provided some distractions. A lot of people were pissed off with this, but I wasn't. I understand why you want to keep Sami Zayn as the champion, especially when he's just getting help from his friends. It just makes you hate him even more. And that is, my friends, old school booking. The winner and still Intercontinental Champion, Sami Zayn. Our next match was for the SmackDown Tag Team Championships. Obviously, the reports of The Miz being sick were true. Now, I don't necessarily know if he has contracted COVID-19 or if he just had the flu or some other sickness, but they were not taking any chances. They've been kind of very tight-lipped about this, so I'm going to assume that he had the virus that's going around, but I don't want to speculate. I don't know that for sure. And the Usos were kind of pissed off about it. Obviously, Roman Reigns had pulled out of it. Dana Brooke got taken out of her match. She was supposed to be in that SmackDown Women's Championship match. So, you know, quite a few people have been quarantined that they really aren't talking about or didn't want anybody to really know about. So nobody would panic and tell them they got to shut down, they got to close down, they got to get everybody out of there. We'll see how they handle it moving forward. But this match was a triple threat singles match for the Tag Team Championships. Representing Miz and Morrison, the champions, was John Morrison. Representing The New Day was Kofi Kingston, and representing the Usos was Jimmy Uso, better known as John Anoa'i, John Uso. The match began with an all-out brawl between the competitors in the match. Everybody just left the ring. They brought the ladders into it. They all set up the ladders, climbed on top of them. Everybody was exchanging strikes while trying to grab the belts. I mean, it was a hot and heavy match. There was so many high spots in this match. These guys are absolute pros, and I don't know if the tag team match would have been as good. I think, actually, these three guys themselves were probably the best representations for their team, because you know how great Morrison is with the high-flying stuff and ladder matches, and obviously Kofi as well, and, you know, I guess both Usos could have stepped in, but because they're both fantastic. But I really enjoyed this match. Near the end of the match, Morrison jumped off the ladder. Jimmy Uso nailed him with a super kick. Jimmy placed Morrison on a bridged ladder before climbing up another one. Morrison got free, shoved Uso off the ladder to the arena floor. Morrison climbed the ladder, and Kingston met him up there as they brawled on top. Uso returns, sets up another ladder before climbing it. A three-way brawl breaks up between all the competitors. All three competitors get the belts down, and Morrison falls off the ladder with the belts in his possession to win the match. So Kofi and Jimmy Uso were standing up there. Like, the camera did a real close-up of them because you couldn't tell exactly what happened. And they both had the hangers that the belts were on. And then they're all looking at each other like, what the hell? And I'm like, yeah, what the hell? And then all of a sudden they pan down to Morrison, who had the both belts in his arms on the mat when he grabbed them when he fell. Really, really cool camera work and really, really great finish. I don't think I've ever seen a finish like that in a tag team ladder match. So I really enjoyed it. I had predicted that the Miz and Morrison would retain their titles, and I was correct. Kevin Owens against Seth Rollins. This has been building for several months now. Obviously, Seth made his heel turn at Kevin Owens' expense a few months ago when he was attacked by the AOP. Seth was in the back of a van, opened up the doors. He was sitting, it was one of those old school vans, like, it had like a chair in it and shit like that. It was like a 1970s shaggin' wagon. He rolled the chair around to reveal himself in a hoodie, takes the hoodie off, and it was Seth. Seth ended up giving him the curb stomp on the concrete, and they were rolling ever since, and they've been feuding back and forth, added more members to their stable. Buddy Murphy had joined AOP and Seth. Seth became the Monday Night Messiah, took over a whole new heel gimmick, and KO at that time was teamed up with Samoa Joe and the Viking Warriors. Now, we haven't seen the Viking Raiders. We haven't seen the Viking Raiders in, shit, I don't even know, a month, 2 months? And we know Samoa Joe has been out, I think. I think the rumors are true. I don't know if they officially, I think they officially announced that he had failed a drug test. Just hilarious that Samoa Joe failed a drug test for performance-enhancing drugs. Anyway, I didn't know Krispy Kreme was a performance-enhancing drug. There was a lot of shit-talking in this match, which was a little bit out of control. I know it's quiet. I know they got to have some kind of noise there because it just gets weird at times. But Seth was doing a lot of shit-talking during this match. Near the end of the match, Rollins missed the charge in the corner. Owens nailed him with a super kick, followed by a cannonball into the corner. Owens then hit Rollins with a swanton bomb for a near fall. KO goes for a pop-up powerbomb. Seth avoided it. Owens went for a stunner. Rollins countered with an enziguri. KO fought back and nailed Rollins with a clothesline. Rollins goes to the ring apron, and Owens dragged him to the top rope. Owens looked for a superplex on Rollins, and Seth blocked it by raking his eyes. Seth then got free, nailed Owen with a buckle bomb, which was crazy. He took him from one corner, took his fat ass all the way over to the other corner into a buckle bomb. It was pretty impressive. And then he super kicked him. Rollins nailed Owens with a thrust kick. He went for the stomp. Owens countered with a pop-up powerbomb for a near fall. I really thought that was the end of the match. That was crazy that he kicked out of that. Seth tried leaving the ring. Owens followed him out there. Rollins hit Owens with the ring bell to cause a DQ. Seth went up the entranceway, up the ramp, and I expected this to happen just because you don't really have many DQs anymore, especially at WrestleMania, typically. KO grabbed the mic and said, no, we're not going to do that. We're not going to finish it that way. Let's restart the match. I don't care what it takes. I want to kick your ass. Let's have a no DQ match. And Rollins, like the dumbass heel, agreed to it. So they restarted the match. The match began with Rollins nailing Owens with a knee strike before throwing him outside the ring. Rollins then followed Owens out there before throwing him into the barricade. Seth kept Kevin down while stomping away on him. Rollins again grabbed Owens, threw him into the barricade. Rollins grabbed the ring steps, and he attacked Owens with him. Excuse me. Seth then grabbed a steel chair and attacked KO with it. Rollins cleared off the announce table before Owens hits him with multiple ring bell shots, kind of getting one back on him. Rollins then fell onto the announce table, and KO climbed this giant Mania sign that they had on the left side. Like, if you're looking at the entrance, it was to your left. A huge WrestleMania sign on the side wall. And Kevin got up on top and leapt off and put Rollins through a table with an elbow drop. It was pretty damn impressive, let me tell you. That would have got a huge pop. Actually, it probably wouldn't even happen, to be quite honest. Just based on the stadium set, I'm assuming. Unless he climbed, like, the truss or something. Owens got up first, threw Rollins back in the ring, hit him with a stunner for the three count. So the winner is Kevin Owens. I don't know if that's going to be the blow-off of this feud, but it was a very, very entertaining match. Rob Gronkowski, who was your host. He's such a fucking moron. His equally dumb friend, Mojo Rawley, were up on the perch. They got interrupted by 24/7 champion R-Truth, which, you know, it's funny that they meant that they did this, because I even asked John on the pre-show yesterday, where the hell has the 24/7 been during all this fucking quarantine and pre-tape stuff? And he's like, hopefully the belt caught COVID-19 and is being laid to rest. But yeah, he thinks the title should have been gone, and he thought it was going to be gone. But old Robbie here had a premonition. I have pretty good premonitions sometimes. And Truth talked about the trouble of being the champion. Everybody's always after him. He can never sleep. He can never eat. He's always looking over his shoulder. So Gronk and Rawley both attacked Truth. Rawley pinned Truth to win the championship. So Mojo Rawley was your new 24/7 champion. He ran away, and Gronk was like, what the fuck, man? Our Universal Championship match. Goldberg, the Universal Heavyweight Champion, taking on not Roman Reigns, but the monster among men, Braun Strowman. As we all know, Roman Reigns pulled out due to the fact that I'm assuming he didn't want to get sick. And they replaced Braun with no fanfare. Literally a voiceover on the pre-taped go-home show of Friday Night SmackDown this past Friday night. As Michael Cole's going over the matches, he said, this match is now Goldberg against the monster among men, Braun Strowman, and just moved on to the next segment. Didn't even say why Roman Reigns wasn't fighting. Roman was still even in the opening promo package of both nights of WrestleMania, even though he was nowhere to be found. The match began with Goldberg nailing Strowman with a kick. He missed a charge in the corner, stopped himself from hitting the ring post. Thank God, because he probably would have fucking knocked himself out like he did in Saudi Arabia. Strowman then went for a power slam. Goldberg escaped it over his back. He hit multiple spears for a near fall. I want to say it was three or four. I think he went for four. And after the fourth one, he went for a jackhammer. Strowman countered by landing multiple standing power slams and then grabbed Goldberg up one more time for a running power slam, which he never even really does that much anymore. Usually he's just kind of a lazy, just drops him down. But about a 4 or 5 minute match, you don't even know if it went that long. It might have been 3 or 4 minutes. Now, Braun Strowman is your new Universal Champion. So Goldberg, the world beater, beat The Fiend, who destroyed everybody in his wake, in about 4 minutes. And Goldberg fell to Strowman in 4 minutes as well. This is the world that we're living in. The final match of the evening was the Boneyard match. Holy, holy shit. I am going to try to describe this entire thing for you. It was something that you really had to see. And we knew this was going to be a cinematic type presentation based on everything that we heard going into this. God, this is so good. So the match started. It was in a cemetery, which I guess a boneyard is another word for a cemetery, which, duh, I didn't even realize that. I'm thinking, like, boneyard? Like, fucking, like, I can't even really tell you what I thought. I thought it had something to do with, like, a fucking mechanic shop or something like that. I am so dumb. I literally didn't even Google the word boneyard. I don't know why I thought of, like, a car or mechanic or fuck. Don't even ask me. Send your hate mail to at Matt Coon Music. The match started with Styles arriving at the Boneyard in a coffin driven in a hearse. It was like an old school hearse, like a 1980s like Cadillac fucking hearse with little lights on the side of it. It was pretty cool.
What's going on? You have John Wangland, one of the hosts of Wrestling With Reality. Check out our shows this week on Wrestling With Reality. We have some great shows. We have our MMA show. We look at, is Khabib Nurmagomedov versus George St. Pierre a reality? Why John Jones is such a disgrace to the UFC? We also have on WCW Monday Nitro Watch Along, and we take a look back at Triple H in his 25-year career in the WWE. So check out Wrestling With Reality on all major podcast outlets.
Business with personality. That's the idea that launched London's business newspaper, City AM, 15 years ago. And it's the same idea that inspired our new daily podcast, The City View, where you'll find me, City AM editor Christian May, interviewing the most well-known, influential and colourful figures from business, politics and finance. The City View from City AM. With a new episode every morning, it's the perfect start to your working day.
The hearse opens up. They pull this coffin out of the back of it. The gong comes on. I mean, Undertaker's music was playing the entire time. The gong hits, and the casket opens up, and it's AJ Styles. Like, hilarious. Like, hey, what's going on? That was a great ride. Where are you, old man? Really, really good stuff. Undertaker showed up riding a motorcycle. They showed him driving in, like, the access road to this, wherever this boneyard was. Really, really cool. And a lot of people were pissed off that they didn't play, you know, Roland or American Badass, or the American Badass song from Kid Rock. They played a Metallica song. I'm one of the biggest Metallica fans in the world, but I don't even remember the name of the song. It's from their latest album. But I still thought it was pretty cool. Like, Metallica and The Undertaker riding a motorcycle, like, fuck yeah. Like, that was badass. Styles, trash-talked Undertaker. Showed Taker in open grave. Styles tried to attack Taker with the brick. Undertaker nailed him with some strikes. Really, really hard punches, too. Like, people forget how good Undertaker is as a striker. Like, one of the best natural punchers in professional wrestling. Styles tried to escape. Taker attacked him with more strikes. Threw him into the coffin. Taker smashed Styles' face under the coffin a few times. Styles avoided Undertaker punch. Undertaker broke a window. So AJ was leaning against the hearse, and Taker didn't do an overhand right. He just kind of a clubbing downward fist motion and went through the window. And when he did, he cut his forearm. He had a pretty big gash on his forearm and he was bleeding. And Taker looked at it and goes, son of a bitch. Really, really cool moment there. Not sure if he meant to do that, but it was a great ad lib if that was the case. Styles fought back. Taker slammed him into the windshield of the hearse. Taker and Styles battled onto the roof of the hearse. Taker dropped Styles before mounting him and just landing punch after punch to the head. It was pretty awesome. Styles fell off the hearse. Undertaker got off it as well. Taker's talking shit the whole time too, like, oh, what happened to me? You know, what happened to the old man, huh? The old man's kicking your ass. Like, and this, to me, I told my wife, and I mentioned this on the show either this week or a couple weeks ago, old school mentality when you're cutting promos, and you could listen to Jim Ross and Stone Cold and anybody else, you know, Jericho, anybody else in their podcast, you know, you don't typically call somebody old or overweight or broken down. You don't ever call anybody an old man, because when that old man kicks your ass, what does that mean for you? How does that make you look when this old broken down guy kicked the shit out of you and beat you? So that being said, they had to build some heat between these guys, and it's a different age. I mean, but I'm glad that they called back to it. I'm glad Taker really called him out and said, oh, what's wrong, AJ? This old man's kicking your ass. What's up with this old man now? Like, it's just good. It's good shit. It's good shit, pal. Styles ended up blinding Undertaker by throwing a handful of dirt into his eyes. AJ followed up by that by nailing Undertaker with some strikes and then a low blow. It kicked him right in the balls. Styles grabbed Taker, attacked him with more punches to the head. Taker fought back, dropped Styles with the right. Taker then knocked Styles into the open grave. And that's when Anderson and Gallows showed up to confront Undertaker. A light turned on in this barn that was there. And then a bunch of druids came, like, knocked down the walls and started walking towards him and formed a circle around Taker. And Taker was like, this is the way it's going to go. Like, this is what we're going to do, huh? Taker fought all those guys off and finally got attacked by the OC. Taker fought back. He also hit them both with a shovel handle. That's pretty badass. Styles returned and broke something over the head of Undertaker. I don't know if it was it looked like somebody else's tombstone or whatever. Like, it looked like concrete, but Styles mounted Taker, started attacking him with a plethora of strikes while injuring his own hand on the last one. He even shook it, like, you know, like he acted like he broke his hand. He very well may have, could have. I mean, they were laying this shit in. Taker got up. Styles tackled him through a fence. And this is where Taker was really, really selling. Like, openly breathing hard and just kind of moaning like, I know that's going to be using sound bites for years to come now. Not him, but me. But, you know, it was just really kind of surreal to see Taker acting that way. But I enjoyed it. Styles started to trash talk Taker again. Taker just laying there and almost like a Vince McMahon kind of thing when Stone Cold was kicking his ass and he just wouldn't give up. He just gave AJ the middle finger. Styles got angry after that. He attacked him with more strikes, grabbed a shovel, knocked Undertaker into the grave. He broke it over his back, which knocked Taker into the open grave that was there. Styles got on a tractor that was there, which had a scoop full of dirt. And he turned it on. He's about to bury Taker. So this pretty much was an unofficial buried alive match, which that's pretty much what I thought it was going to be. And then this giant light appeared behind him. And Taker appeared behind him, like stood up right behind him with the light shining towards him. It's such a cool visual. This whole thing was shot so well and produced so well. But yeah, Taker appeared behind Styles. He knocked him off the tractor. Styles climbed up to the roof of this abandoned barn. Taker followed him up there. Taker stops Styles from running after like he raised his arms up like Kane and shot flames and shoot like explode on top of the roof and fuck. Styles is like, holy shit, he couldn't get away from him. Taker then attacked Gallows and Anderson that climbed up there. He threw Gallows off the roof. Then he hit Anderson with a tombstone on top of the roof, so he's fucking done. Styles returned, attacked Undertaker with some strikes. Taker was absolutely unfazed. Like, he was in total, like Hulkamania, hulked-up mode. He chokeslammed Styles off of the roof through a bunch of boards that were below. It looked like a brutal freaking chokeslam. It looked like a brutal landing. I don't know how they gimmicked it, but he pretty much landed through, like, the walls that was knocked down. Taker got off the roof, and then he was talking shit to the injured Styles, you know, talking shit about, hey, man, the old man's kicking your ass, blah, blah, blah. Taker picked up Styles, dropped Styles next to the open grave. Taker picked Styles up again and gave him a hug. He's like, don't worry, man. You did well. Don't worry. It's all good. It's over. You know, he just hugged him, and then he let him go, and Styles is like catching his breath. I'm like, all right, man, cool. Then Taker just turned around and kicked him in the face into the open grave, climbed up on the driver's seat of the tractor, dumped a pile of dirt into the open grave that Styles was in. Taker walked past the grave, pulled off this I don't know, burlap sack or whatever, or some kind of sheet that was over the tombstone, and it read AJ Styles tombstone, whatever his birthday was, 1978 to 2020 or whatever. It was pretty cool. I really enjoyed that. Styles' hand was sticking out of the grave as Undertaker rode out of the boneyard on his motorcycle, and then like fire came on like by the barn, and Undertaker symbol was lit up on the front of the barn. Really, really cool visual. A lot of purists were like, what the fuck is this? But I really enjoyed it. It was really well done. If you haven't seen it, go back to the network and check it out. It's absolutely worth it. So that was the end of night one. Night two, our kickoff show, was a cold match, which I don't even know if these guys have had any history, but it was nothing happening. Natty Neidhart taking on Liv Morgan. Liv got the win. Not really, seriously, not much to talk about it, honestly. Not even worth going over. Like I said, it was just a cold match. These two had no history behind them at all. Our first match on the main card for night two was for the NXT Women's Championship, the NXT Women's Champion Rhea Ripley, taking on the former 10-time WWE Women's Champion Charlotte Flair. This was a long match. This was a brutal match. Rhea got her knee kayfabe injured early. And she sold it the absolute entire match. The only issue I had with this match was Rhea was screaming the entire time. Like, every punch, every kick, anytime she got hit, she was just totally, like, overselling it audibly. And I know they wanted to create noise because it was quiet in there, but fuck, man, it was really obnoxious and annoying after a while. Like, I know they're trying to make it seem realistic and trying to create some, you know, some ambient noise or whatever. But, it was a little bit much for me, but this went back and forth. Like, these two beat the living shit out of each other. I gave Charlotte shit on the pregame show for not being that great over the last year, and especially that triple threat women's match at WrestleMania last year. She was so bad in it, and she's kind of been rinse and repeat in all of her other matches, but this was very, very good. I mean, she was super stiff with Rhea, especially her chop blocks from behind. This really is worth going back and watching. That being said, Charlotte did get the win with the figure eight as Ripley tapped out, and a lot of people are pissed off over that. But I had to tell you, man, I called it. I had a feeling, knowing Vince McMahon, that Charlotte Flair was going to win this title. And Johnny's like, there's no reason why she should. She should because she's Charlotte Flair, and that's the way she's been treated her entire career. Why do you think she's a 10-time champion? Why do you think, you know, they've been giving her the Ric Flair kind of treatment? She is going to be portrayed as the greatest women's wrestler of all time. Before it's all said and done, that is how they're going to treat her. They will give her, you know, her dad's treatment, pretty much. Is she a ratings draw? No. Obviously, the time she was on NXT leading up to this, she was a channel changer. I mean, nothing. She didn't move the needle at all. But she is your new NXT World's Women's Champion, and you're going to have to, well, let's just say, like her old man would say, there's two things you can do about it. Nothing and like it. Aleister Black taking on Bobby Lashley. Aleister Black wins with a black mask. That's fucking not even worth talking about. Lana looked great. Lashley looked great, but he never wins any matches, so the fuck? These guys had no history. That's stupid. Otis taking on Dolph Ziggler with Sonya Deville in his corner. Mandy and Tucker were nowhere to be found, so Otis was on his own. The match began with Ziggler avoiding a charging Otis. Otis cornered Ziggler before landing a shoulder thrust and avalanche. Otis missed the charge in the corner before Ziggler knocks him out of the ring with a super kick. Ziggler then exited the ring, threw Otis into the ring post. Dolph gets Otis back in the ring, tries to get a near fall on him. Ziggler kept Otis down, holding him down with a rear chin lock. Ziggler then released the hold to hit Otis with a drop kick for a near fall. Dolph then followed up on that by choking Otis on the middle rope. Ziggler kept Otis by the ropes, just dragging his face against the ropes. Ziggler then hit Otis with a neck breaker and an elbow drop for a near fall. Ziggler kept Otis down while holding him into another chin lock. Dolph released the hold, attacked Otis with a few strikes. Otis caught Ziggler during a drop kick attempt, and he monkey flipped him into the corner. Ziggler took some swings at Otis. Otis dropped him with multiple clotheslines. Otis then followed up by nailing Dolph with a slam before standing on his back. That's quite a big guy to be standing on someone's back. Otis then dropped Ziggler with a few hard Irish whips into the corner. Otis picked up Ziggler, dumped him out of the ring. Otis then left the ring, threw Ziggler into the barricade before throwing him into the ring post. Otis then got Ziggler back in the ring, followed him in there before landing a pop-up power slam. Sonya distracted Otis during a caterpillar attempt, and that's when Dolph kicked Otis squarely in the heavy machinery. Mandy Rose came out. She attacked Sonya. Rose threw Deville into the ring to distract the ref so she could low blow Dolph. A lot of nut shots in this match. Otis then hit Ziggler with a caterpillar for the three count. After the match, Otis and Mandy had their first kiss. And if there was a crowd there, you would have heard 70,000 people go, "Aww." But instead, it was just me and my wife on her couch going, "Aww." Then we had a last man standing match between Edge and Randy Orton. These two have had the best promos of their entire career leading up to this match. So well done. Literally, if you, like I said yesterday, if you want to sit a younger wrestler down in front of a TV and put on these videos and say, hey, this is how you get over, this is how you cut a promo, this is how you build intrigue for your match and become a more well-rounded competitor, just watch these two. This match is way too long to fucking describe. I don't know the official time of the match, but I want to say it was probably close to a 40-minute match of fighting all around the WWE Performance Center. I will say this. There was some controversy when they kind of first went backstage into the training room, into the weight room. And Orton grabbed Edge and wrapped this cable around his neck that was hanging from the weight apparatus, the universal machine. And my immediate thought, maybe it would have been my media thought if this Dark Side of the Ring documentary hadn't come out recently in the last couple weeks on Chris Benoit. But my first initial thought, and going on Twitter, a lot of people's initial thoughts when they saw this was, holy shit, Randy Orton just choked Edge with a cable on the weight machine. Very reminiscent of how Chris Benoit killed himself. And obviously, Chris, if you don't know, wrapped it around his neck and lifted up the weights and kicked the weights out, and that snapped his neck. But this was too close to that, especially Edge being a friend of Chris Benoit's. And obviously, Randy probably was too. And that documentary just came out a couple weeks ago. I'm not sure what they were thinking when they did this. But it's funny how we all collectively thought the same thing when it happened. That being said, there was a table there, like a folding table in the weight room. Not even sure why, with a computer chair set up there. Out of place, but whatever. They used the table a little bit. They slammed each other against it. Moved the table out of the way. Edge put Randy in this desk chair. Climbed up on the weight apparatus, like the pull-up bars, the chin-up bars. And swung off of it onto Randy, kind of a seated plancha, who was sitting in a chair and knocked him to the ground. I tweeted out, watching Edge give Randy Orton a lap dance is pretty disturbing. Hashtag WrestleMania. That was my first thought about that. But hey, that gives you a look into the mind of Rad Rob. It's pretty fucking disturbing what you'll find out. There's also a spot when they went into the conference room with this giant, like, 20-foot-long table. A steel table, according to Tom Phillips. I don't think it was steel, but it's pretty fucking hard. It's pretty solid. I will say that. I would even call it maybe a concrete table, to be quite honest. The fucking thing was pretty sturdy. And for whatever reason, had, like, this lighting rig that was on top of it, like, to light the room, or light over the table. It was like fluorescent lights along this whole light bar going all the way down the length of the table, but like almost like a steel cage, or maybe like I wouldn't say chicken wire, but definitely a fancy, you know, a cagey kind of material that was the cover for it, and it's pretty goddamn sturdy. Edge got Orton down on the table, climbed up on this light rig, like grabbed onto it with his hands, and through his ridiculous core strength, I mean, Edge is in the best shape of his life. Like, got to be doing DDP yoga, because that's the only way I could, I ever got core strength like that. Pulled himself on this rig, pulled his legs up to, his feet up to it. So he's holding onto this steel cage type thing. You gotta see it to believe it. I'm probably not even doing a great job of explaining it. You're like, the fuck is a steel cage doing in their fucking boardroom? Anyway. Dropped off of it onto Orton with an elbow drop, and you heard him hit that solid table, and I think he broke his back. Like, he immediately grabbed his back and was selling, like, one side, like his hip, lower, like his right side of his back area, lower right side of his back. He was holding that the entire, it reminded me of Shawn Michaels almost, but he was selling that for the rest of the match. And eventually they go into this back room in the warehouse area. And Edge climbed up on top of this, I want to say kind of like a pallet racking or, some kind of a shelving apparatus and put Orton through a table, which didn't, this is a last man standing match, by the way. So the referee's counting the entire time, every time somebody was down, they all answered a count for this. Went back further into the warehouse where there was a pickup truck and a tractor trailer and a forklift. And I'm surprised they didn't use a forklift, because that's usually their go-to when it comes to shit like this. They fought on top of this badass fucking black pickup truck with these sick rims. And had this very sturdy bedliner that they climbed up onto. It supported, 400 pounds. And Orton got Edge up on top of the pickup truck. Kicked him in the gut. Got him in a reverse front chancery and hit him with what normally is on the ropes, his DDT. DDT'd him onto the bedliner of this truck. Like, it wasn't really a bedliner. It was almost like a cover. It wasn't like a hard, like a cap on the truck. But it was just like a hard cover that was between the bed of the truck and, I don't know, fucking the top of the bed, whatever. Hard to fucking explain. Anyway, I'm not a truck guy. The referee immediately went over, and, I mean, this is all pre-taped and shit. I mean, I could have edited this out, but the ref immediately went up to him. And this is a fucking last man standing match. They've done all kinds of crazy shit to each other already. Pretty brutal stuff. Ref goes to Edge and literally gets down and checks him. Even squeezed his hand to give him the Iggy. And was saying something to him that we couldn't hear. They lowered the audio so he couldn't hear it. And was talking to him, I guess, just to make sure that he didn't hurt his neck on that. But, you know, they replayed it in a... You could clearly see Edge put both hands down. I don't think his head even ever hit the bed. Randy did a great job of taking care of him on that one. But it's just funny to see this barbaric match and the referee actually check on Edge to see if he's legit okay. They eventually climbed up these road cases that were there and stacked up nicely, one and then two, and then up to the top of the trailer that was there. They fought on top of the trailer for a while. Edge ended up spearing Orton on top of that. Orton still answered the call. And then Edge went for another spear and got RKO'd. And somehow got up at 8. I mean, this is fucking like 30 minutes in. Pretty fantastic that, you know, the three most deadliest letters in wrestling. And he got up at an 8 count. Orton then went down and grabbed some steel chairs. Came back up on top of the trailer. Orton grabbed one of the chairs and hit a solid shot to Edge's back. Like, literally left a red mark on Edge's back. Like, he hit him pretty fucking hard. I know that had to hurt. And I know it wasn't a shot to the neck, but it's still your spine, man. And that shit's still connected. And it's still a 46-year-old guy or so. And that hurts. It really does. He set up Edge for a concerto. Edge got up and got him in that standing, like, triangle choke thing that he does. Choked Orton out, put him on the chair, hit him with a one-man concerto, and Orton got counted out. The referee called for the bell. So after a very long match, which a lot of people are complaining about was too long, fuck you guys, man. This is a great match, and I don't care what anybody says. I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was pretty long, but man, these two were absolute pros, and they beat the shit out of each other. So I am giving both these guys kudos for what they had to put their bodies through to entertain you fuck-offs that didn't enjoy the match. So we then go to a bunch of wrestlers who were running after Mojo Rawley. Gronk leapt off the top of the perch on top of everybody, pinned Rawley to win the 24/7 championship, and then ran out the door. So the host is gone, so the host has left the building. Rob Gronkowski is your new WWE 24/7 champion. That's right, I said that. That is a real thing. Our next match is for the Raw Tag Team Championships. The champions, the Street Profits, two of the most obnoxious wrestlers in the entire world, taking on Austin Theory and Angel Garza with Zelina Vega. Austin Theory was a late replacement this week because Andrade injured himself in a tag team match they had last week. So Austin Theory got called up from NXT, who's been getting jobbed out lately. And I thought they were going to put the belts on Garza and Theory, just for the fact because I thought maybe Garza and Andrade were supposed to win initially. I don't know if they were or if plans changed, but Johnny was right. Austin has been made to look like a dumbass, and he actually ate the pin here. I don't even want to talk about this match. It was pretty bad, and the Street Profits are still pretty obnoxious, and they're still the Raw Tag Team Champions. After the match, Austin and Angel and Zelina attacked the Street Profits, and then Bianca Belair just comes out of nowhere. Never been on, well, I mean, has she been on WWE TV? I'm not even sure. She made the save, took out Vega with her fucking finisher. I don't even know what the hell it is. It's like the last kiss, or the best kissed, or the most kissed, or I don't fucking know. And then she swung her hair around and danced. So now they have the most obnoxious women's wrestler with the most fucking obnoxious tag team. That's great. Maybe they can be the most obnoxious fucking six-person tag team champions. Titus O'Neil came back to, came onto the stage to finish off hosting the rest of WrestleMania 36 because Rob Gronkowski left the building. Our next match is for the SmackDown Women's Championship, a five-way elimination match. It was supposed to be six-pack challenge. But like I said earlier, Dana Brooke was quarantined. Supposedly she is sick. Couldn't make this match. So we had Bayley defending her title against Sasha Banks, Lacey Evans, Naomi, and Tamina. Naomi's entrance was really cool, but she had like these targets on her titties. Weird, like literally had like targets on her boobs, and like in the glow in the dark, it looked like boobs. So I go on Twitter and say, I didn't know at Target was sponsoring at Naomi. Yeah, I thought it was funny. Pretty good match. They all teamed up on Tamina in the beginning of the match to eliminate her. So yeah, not much to talk about there. Then it was Naomi and Lacey teaming up to take on Sasha and Bayley. Eventually, Naomi got taken out. So then it was Sasha and Bayley double-teaming Lacey Evans. Eventually, Bayley knocked, I think it was Sasha, off the apron. And Sasha got back in the ring, was pissed off. She's like, I've always had your back. And Bayley's like, no, I've always had yours. And I always will. And let's just talk about this after the match. And I'm thinking, what the fuck if you guys have to, what if you guys have to face each other? Like, you're not going to be talking about it after the match. But that's when Lacey got in the ring and went to attack Sasha. Bayley pushed Sasha out of the way and then pushed Lacey towards Sasha. Sasha got taken out with a woman's right and pinned. So then it was Bayley and Lacey Evans at the end of the match. Evans recovered, nails Bayley with a series of clotheslines, followed by a neckbreaker. Evans got trapped in the ropes before landing a stunner for a near fall. Bayley held Lacey down while landing knee drops to her shoulder. Bayley kept Evans trapped in the corner while tying her down with a tag rope. Bayley attacked the trapped Evans with a plethora of unanswered strikes. Lacey eventually dropped Bayley with a boot to the face. Lacey got free. She attacked Bayley with a bunch of kicks. Lacey then nailed a cornered Bayley with a seated senton. Lacey went to the top rope, landed a double jump moonsault for a near fall. That's when Sasha Banks returned and hit Evans with a backstabber. Bayley then hit Evans with the front DDT for the three count. The winner and still SmackDown Women's Champion, Bayley. So both of your women's champions remain intact. Both have been champions for well over 300 days now. That's right. That happened. I knew Lacey was too green, but I didn't think she was going to win, but I didn't think Bayley would retain. I thought Sasha would have been the one to win the match and then move into a program with her, but they might. They might still do that. There was a little bit of tension building up, so that may be where they're headed for their next pay-per-view. And then we had the Firefly Funhouse match, which I'm going to do something unprecedented. I haven't played an entire match for you guys before, and I know it's all audio, and you won't be able to see some of the subtle stuff that's going on, but I still think it's worth listening to. It's about 14, 15 minutes, but I do want to play it for you, and then I'll come back and talk about it. And if you haven't obviously seen it, please make sure you go on the WWE Network and watch it. But here is the Firefly Funhouse match between John Cena and The Fiend.
To reach for the stars as you never have before? Do you have enough ruthless aggression to excel beyond your wildest dreams? Do you have enough ruthless aggression to make the necessary sacrifices of mind, body, and soul in order to be a success in this company? Show me, or you're fired!
Tonight, I'm issuing a challenge for anyone back there in that locker room
to come down
here and face Bray Wyatt! you think you got what it takes to hang with Bray Wyatt?
Ruthless aggression!
Wow! Who ever thought this was actually gonna work?
I'm not gonna lie, this is pretty embarrassing, you know?
Ruthless aggression!
Oh, John.
I am literally living your biggest failure right now.
I'm not gonna lie.
It's sad. I guess I can see why you almost got fired, right?
Ruthless aggression!
Woo-hoo! You can look, but you can't touch.
Ruthless aggression.
Wow, John, you know what I'm thinking right now? Is this really what you want to do with your life?
Too hot to handle, too cold to hold. Dig it.
A thugonomics, I just switched like that in mid-fight. The audience will be excited. They just went from 6 to midnight. Oh, I get your little joke. I can only talk in rhyme, right? Fine. I still shine. You ain't taking away my limelight. If all I got is rap and I use it to my advantage, because unlike Husky Harris, it's a weight that I can manage. Oh, Bray, I got a great idea for your puppet show. I put my junk in a glove. You can call him Mr. Suck It, bro. You've been a disappointment since they brought you to the dance. You a slut for opportunity. You're blowing every chance.
Chances? How dare you talk to me about chances, John Cena? I have had to earn everything I've ever been given in life, and still they're taken from me. You, You're the golden goose, John. Your chances, they're unlimited. You're untouchable. But you're not a hero, John. You're a bully. You're a horrible person. You take the weaknesses of others and you turn them into jokes. You would do anything for fame, John. Congratulations. You're the man now, John. Poor, lonely John Cena. This is your last chance, man. The floor is yours.
You in the doctor's house trying to get up in my face? All you really get is these nuts up in your face.
I was the color red in a world full of black and white. I had the whole world in my hands. Abigail spoke of this day my entire life. You were supposed to be a man of the people. Then why weren't you listening? Prophecy fulfilled. But instead, it's my grandest failure. I've heard for so long, I can't remember what it's like to feel. But now, it's time to rewrite my own story.
Superman.
But this is.
Six years ago, you made the wrong choice, cowboy.
Fix it. Fix it, John.
Yeah!
this WrestleMania match is going to accomplish what should have happened 6 years ago. Ending the existence of the most overhyped, overvalued, overprivileged WWE superstar in existence.
I don't know what I just saw. I have no idea what I just saw. And I go on Twitter and a lot of people are like, the fuck did I just watch? My best friend texted me, CyberMonkey11, and said, did you just watch that match? I'm like, yeah. He's like, what did I just see? He predicted at the Rumble, like during our pre-show, that he was in our live chat and said, he thought Cena was going to make a surprise appearance and win the Rumble and face The Fiend at WrestleMania for the title. He was close. I mean, we still got the match. He said they would they'd probably build off their history together with John beating Bray Wyatt at WrestleMania several years ago, which they did. So he was completely right about that, but he's like, I wasn't right about this match at all. I don't know what the fuck I just saw. And I'm like, yeah. I don't either. Definitely go out of your way to see it. The visuals alone are fantastic. So I hope you get the kind of the gist of what happened. John Cena comes down the ring, and then all of a sudden, you know, they were going to introduce Bray. Bray comes on the screen in the funhouse and goes through the door that was there. And then all of a sudden, Cena looks around, and he's in the funhouse. Like, he doesn't even know how the fuck he got there. And then Cena goes through the same door that Wyatt went, the front door to the funhouse, and it was pitch black. And that's where it took off from there. That's when we saw the devil Vince McMahon talking about ruthless aggression. And then you have to see this. I mean, I want you to go see this, but I want you to listen to it as well because it's so fucking bizarre. And I hope you enjoyed it. But so they showed the SmackDown fist just laying on the ground. Like they grabbed a bunch of shit from WWE's warehouse. Like if you ever follow Bruce Pritchard, he's got several videos on Something to Wrestle of him going through the WWE warehouse and seeing all this old stuff there. But they pulled the SmackDown fist out. Cena was dressed up in his original gear from when his first ever match on SmackDown when Kurt Angle called him out. It's so funny. And then eventually they did this whole Saturday Night's Main Event thing in front of the what looked like a very weathered blue, old, you know, the old big bar blue steel cage. And then the backdrop was the Saturday Night's Main Event giant banner that they had. It was still in pretty good shape, too. Like, it was pretty awesome. And then Bray cut his promo there, and Cena came in and cut his promo. And then he had, Cena had two barbells, and he's like, doing bicep curls, but, like, really, really fast. And Bray's center looking at him like, what the hell is he doing? And this went on for a good 10, 15 seconds of Cena just going crazy, just lifting the weights so hard that he was too tired to attack Wyatt, and he couldn't lift his arms. I love the fact they had Mercy the Buzzard, and which he was taking over from Macho Man, I think it was. I forgot what they call him, like the Macho Mercy or something like that, and Vince McMannequin or Mix McDevil or some shit. And Vince goes, "Oh, that's good shit." Like, off the whole John Moxley, you know, quote, "That's good shit, pal." That's good shit, pal. The hashtag "That's good shit, pal" is trending worldwide right now because of this. But yeah, then they did this whole like John Cena is the Doctor of Thugonomics and cutting. You know, you heard that promo he cut on him and how sad Bray was and all that. And Cena was still being mean to him. Then they had Bray pretend to be Eric Bischoff, an NWO knockoff on Nitro, and John Cena came out in an NWO shirt and ended up attacking him. So, like, after that, Cena had Wyatt down and mounted him and was, like, punching him in the face. And all of a sudden, like, you know, the screen flickers and He's beating up the pig puppet there. The fuck's his name? Huskus. Was it Huskus? Yeah, something like that. And he's like, what the hell's going on? And then the Fiend appeared behind him. And Fiend got him in the Mandible Claw and hit him with his Sister Abigail. And then the Fiend reapplied the Mandible Claw and Wyatt made a three count. So the winner was the Fiend. And my take on this whole thing was, number one, if this really was a real thing, the Fiend will never lose a match ever again. Like, after all this, like, how the fuck can anybody compete with him? But I think this was just kind of a dream sequence. I think this was in Bray Wyatt's own mind, and the match never actually really happened. And I'm hoping that's how they explain it in the weeks coming ahead. Otherwise, John Cena's dead, and you'll never see him again. So, fuck if I know. Super fantastic. Again, the purists are like, I don't fucking get it. This is so stupid. And then most people were like, this is the most amazing thing. Like, the Boneyard match and the Funhouse match was the best thing we've seen ever. And none of the rest of the card even matters. Speaking of which, your main event for the WWE Championship, Brock Lesnar, the champion, with Paul Heyman in his corner, taking on the winner of the Royal Rumble, Drew McIntyre. Very, very short match. The match began with Lesnar attacking McIntyre with strikes, landing his shoulder thrust in the corner, typical Brock Lesnar shit. McIntyre fought back, hit him with a Claymore kick for a near fall. McIntyre then missed Claymore kick, and Lesnar took McIntyre to Suplex City, giving him several German suplexes. Brock then hit Drew with an F5 for a one count, hit him with a second F5 for a near fall, hit a third F5 for another near fall. Lesnar went for a fourth F5, and McIntyre escaped, hit a Claymore kick, went in the corner, ran after him, hit him with another Claymore kick, then ran against the ropes and hit Lesnar with one more Claymore kick for the three count. So this was literally booked just like the Universal title match between Goldberg and Braun Strowman. The winner and new WWE champion, Drew McIntyre, which even my wife was like, that sucks, you know, for Drew winning his first title like that, and didn't even care about Braun Strowman winning his first title, but sucks for Drew winning his first title, and it's in front of nobody. And Drew was even yelling at the camera, thank you all, thank you guys, you're all here with me right now. And then going off the air on top of the turnbuckle, screaming, holding the WWE title with no fireworks, no adulation. Just kind of an anticlimactic way to go off the air, and kind of sad, really, but that's just the situation that we're in. So there you go, guys. That is the entire card. I enjoyed both nights of WrestleMania. A couple matches sucked, but other than that, I think they did a fantastic job, and it was better than I anticipated. Like, I knew it was going to be special just because it's WWE, and they always make it special. I mean, when push comes to shove, when it really comes down to it, they can put out a hell of a product when they want to. And this was a hell of a good job. Now, most people polled worldwide want to see another two-night WrestleMania. When we get back to normal next year, hopefully, if we do, you never know. Two-day format is the way to go. And what do you do with SmackDown? What do you do with the Hall of Fame? What do you do with TakeOver? Obviously, logistically, that's going to cause a problem. But I would love to see another two-day WrestleMania event and just break it up into 2 days and you get excited, really get excited for both days at this, you know, at that point. So maybe they will. Who knows? Maybe there's a lot of things they may utilize going forward. The pre-tape stuff has been fucking off the hook, though. I mean, it's been really, really enjoyable. They've made the most out of this whole virus bullshit going on. So that is your WrestleMania 36 wrap-up, all 18 matches. Again, I enjoyed this show. I enjoyed both nights. Raw is pre-taped, and I know NXT is pre-taped, and if you read the reports online, a lot of people are saying that it's taped through NXT, but SmackDown isn't taped, and people are kind of worried, or you know, there's rumors running around that they might just shut down for a few weeks, and that SmackDown won't happen this week. Hopefully it does, because I'll have the Ocho on the show. Next week, I got roped into Grappler Appreciation Week from the Grappler Gazette. We're going to have El Americano 6 on our Monday Night Raw review show on Tuesday. El Americano 7 will be on our AEW versus NXT Wednesday Night War show on Thursday. And El Americano Ocho, the Ocho, Ochi, my best friend, will be on Saturday on the flagship. And we're supposed to break down SmackDown. SmackDown doesn't happen, he'll still be on either way. But I really want him to watch SmackDown because he hasn't watched wrestling since 1985. And it'd be really entertaining to have him have to break down SmackDown with me. So we'll see what happens there. But it is Grappler Appreciation Week on Rad Turtles Wrestling Podcast this coming week, starting on Tuesday. If you want to follow me on Twitter, please follow me at RadRobGaming. Check me out on Twitch, twitch.tv/RadRobGaming, streaming every Tuesday night, 6 p.m. Central, and usually every Sunday around 2, but this coming Sunday will be Easter, so I will not be on per the orders of my wife. I also have a YouTube gaming channel called Rad Rob Gaming. I have over 400 plus videos on there for you to watch, so I would appreciate it if you check that out. If you want to follow the show on Twitter, it is at RadTurtlesPOD. Send us an email, RadTurtlesWrestling@gmail.com, Facebook.com/RadTurtlesWrestling, and check out our company website for the Reality Check Podcast Network. All of our show links, all of our bios, all of our information, our merchandise page is up there. Just go to rcpodnetwork.com. I'll be back on Tuesday for the Monday Night Raw review with El Americano 6 from the Brothers Grappler and the Grappler Gazette. Thank you guys for listening. I appreciate all your support. I hope you enjoyed this recap of the Too Big for Just One Night. We may not ever have to hear that again. WrestleMania 36. Until then, guys, be well. Have a great Monday. We'll see you on Tuesday. Take care. Thanks again for listening to the Rad Turtles Wrestling Podcast. Once again, you can follow us on Twitter. We are at RadTurtlesPOD. And you can email the show and we will read it on air. Our email address is RadTurtlesWrestling@gmail.com. Thanks for tuning in. We appreciate all of your support. You have been listening to the Rad Turtles Wrestling Podcast only here on the Reality Check Podcast Network.